Blog Talk Radio.
You want answered.
Less than a year from now, in this very arena, one of these 10 candidates, or one of the 7 on the previous debate tonight, will accept the Republican Party's nomination. Tonight's candidates were selected based on an average of just a few hours ago, we heard from the candidates ranked 11 through 17, and now the primetime event, the top 10.
Also, the Fox News is partnering for tonight's debate on Facebook. For the past several weeks, we've been asking you for questions for the candidates on Facebook. Nearly 6 million of you, 6 million viewed the debate videos on our site, and more than 40,000 of you submitted questions, some of which you will hear us asking the candidates tonight.
As for the candidates who will be answering those questions, here they are. Positioned on the stage by how they stand in the polls. In the center of the stage tonight, businessman Donald Trump. Former Florida Governor Jeb Bush. Wisconsin Governor Scott Walker. Former Arkansas Governor Mike Huckabee.
Neurosurgeon Dr. Ben Carson. Texas Senator Ted Cruz. Florida Senator Marco Rubio.
Kentucky Senator Rand Paul. New Jersey Governor Chris Christie. And your very own Governor of Ohio. Well, I think you would call that a home field advantage.
It might be. We'll see.
Listen, the rules. That's what Jet's gonna
be. It might be. The rules for tonight are simple. 1 minute for answers, 30 seconds for follow-ups, and if a candidate runs over, you'll hear this. We also have a big crowd here with us tonight in the home of the Cavaliers, as I mentioned. And while we expect them to be enthusiastic, as you heard, we don't want to take anything away from the valuable time for the candidates. So we're looking for somewhere between a original LeBron James dunk and the Cleveland Public Library across the street. Somewhere there, we'll find a balance tonight. Without further ado, let's begin. Gentlemen, we know how much you love hand-raising questions. So we promise this is the only one tonight, the only one. Is there anyone on stage, and can I see hands, who is unwilling tonight to pledge your support to the eventual nominee of the Republican Party and pledge to not run an independent campaign against that person? Again, I'd like you to raise your hand now. Raise your hand now if you won't make that pledge tonight. Mr. Trump, to be clear, you're standing on a Republican primary.
I fully understand.
The place where the RNC will give the nominee the nod.
I fully understand.
And that experts say an independent run would almost certainly hand the race over to Democrats and likely another Clinton. You can't say tonight that you can make that pledge.
I cannot say. I have to respect the person that, if it's not me, the person that wins. If I do win and I'm leading by quite a bit, that's what I want to do. I can totally make that pledge. If I'm the nominee, I will pledge. I will not run as an independent. But and I am discussing it with everybody, but I'm talking about a lot of leverage. We want to win, and we will win. But I want to win as the Republican. I want to run as the Republican nominee.
So tonight you can't say if another one of these.
What's wrong? Okay. What's wrong? He buys and sells politicians of all stripes. He's already, he's already hedging his bet on the Clintons, okay? So if he doesn't run as a Republican, maybe he supports Clinton, or maybe he runs as an independent.
Okay.
But I'd say that he's already hedging his bets because he's used to buying politicians.
Well, you know, there's plenty of money. But just to be clear, you can't make it. We're going to move on. You're not going to make the pledge.
I will not make the pledge at this time.
Okay.
Gentlemen, our first round of questions is on the subject of electability in the general election. And we start tonight with you, Dr. Carson. You are a successful neurosurgeon, but you admit that you have had to study up when it comes to foreign policy, saying there's a lot to learn. Your critics say that your inexperience shows. You suggested that the Baltic states are not a part of NATO. Just months ago, you were unfamiliar with the major political parties and government in Israel. And domestically, you thought Alan Greenspan had been Treasury Secretary instead of Federal Reserve Chair. Aren't these basic mistakes? And don't they raise legitimate questions about whether you are ready to be president?
Well, I could take issue with all of those things, but we don't have time. But I will say, we have a debate here tonight, and we will have an opportunity to explore those areas. I'm looking very much forward to demonstrating that, in fact, the thing that is probably most important is having a brain and to be able to figure things out and learn things very rapidly. So, you know, experience comes from a large number of different arenas. And America became a great nation early on, not because it was flooded with politicians, but because it was flooded with people who understood the value of personal responsibility, hard work, creativity, innovation, and that's what will get us on the right track now as well.
Senator Rubio, when Jeb Bush announced his candidacy for presidency, he said this: there's no passing off responsibility when you're a governor, no blending into the legislative crowd. Could you please address Governor Bush across the stage here and explain to him why you, someone who has never held executive office, are better prepared to be president than he is, a man who you say did a great job running your state of Florida for 8 years?
Well, thank you for the question, Chris, and it's great to be here tonight. Let me begin by saying this. I'm not new to the political process. I was making a contribution as the speaker of the third largest and most diverse state in the country well before I even got into the Senate. I would add to that that this election cannot be a resume competition. It's important to be qualified, but if this election is a resume competition, then Hillary Clinton's going to be the next president because she's been in office and in government longer than anybody else running here tonight. Here's what this election better be about. This election better be about the future, not the past. It better be about the issues our nation and the world is facing today, not simply the issues we once faced. This country is facing an economy that has been radically transformed. You know, the largest retailer in the country, in the world today, Amazon, doesn't even own a single store. And these changes have been disruptive. They have changed people's lives. The jobs that once sustained our middle class, they either don't pay enough or they are gone. And we need someone that understands that is our nominee. If I'm our nominee, how is Hillary Clinton going to lecture me about living paycheck to paycheck? I was raised paycheck to paycheck. How is she gonna lecture me about student loans? I owed over $100,000 just 4 years ago. If I'm our nominee, we will be the party of the future.
Governor Bush, you have insisted that you're all your own man. You said you have a life experience uniquely your own, not your father's, not your brother's. But there are several opponents on this stage who get big applause lines in early voting states with this line, quote, the last thing the country needs is another Bush in the Oval Office. So do you understand the real concern in this country about dynastic politics?
Absolutely, I do. And I'm going to run hard, run with heart, and run to win. I'm going to have to earn this. Maybe the bar is even higher for me. That's fine. I've got a record in Florida. I'm proud of my dad. I'm certainly proud of my brother. In Florida, they called me Jeb because I earned it. I cut taxes every year, totaling $19 billion. We balanced every budget. We went from $1 billion of reserves to $9 billion of reserves. We were one of two states that went to AAA bond rating. They call me Vito Corleone because I vetoed 2,500 separate line items in the budget. I'm my own man. I govern as a conservative, and I govern effectively. And the net effect was, during my years, 1.3 million jobs were created. We left the state better off because I applied conservative principles in a purple state the right way, and people rose up.
Mr. Trump, one of the things people love about you is you speak your mind and you don't use a politician's filter. However, that is not without its downsides, in particular when it comes to women. You've called women you don't like fat pigs, dogs, slobs, and disgusting animals. Your Twitter account...
Only women have done it all.
No, it wasn't. Your Twitter account... For the record, it was well beyond Rosie
O'Donnell. Yes, I'm sure.
Your Twitter account has several disparaging comments about women's looks. You once told a contestant on Celebrity Apprentice it would be a pretty picture to see her on her knees. Does that sound to you like the temperament of a man who should elect as president? And how will you answer the charge from Hillary Clinton, who is likely to be the Democratic nominee, that you are part of the war on women?
I think the big problem this country has is being politically correct. I've been challenged by so many people, and I don't frankly have time for total political correctness. And to be honest with you, this country doesn't have time either. This country is in big trouble. We don't win anymore. We lose to China. We lose to Mexico, both in trade and at the border. We lose to everybody. And frankly, what I say, and oftentimes it's fun, it's kidding, we have a good time. What I say is what I say. And honestly, Megan, if you don't like it, I'm sorry. I've been very nice to you, although I could probably maybe not be based on the way you have treated me, but I wouldn't do that. But you know what? We need strength, we need energy, we need quickness, and we need brain in this country to turn it around. That I can tell you right now.
Senator Cruz, your colleague, Senator Paul, right there next to you, said a few months ago he agrees with you on a number of issues, but he says you do nothing to grow the party. He says you feed red meat to the base, but you don't reach out to minorities. You have a toxic relationship with GOP leaders in Congress. You even called the Republican Senate leader, Mitch McConnell, a liar recently. How can you win in 2016 when you're such a divisive figure?
Chris, I believe the American people are looking for someone to speak the truth. If you're looking for someone to go to Washington, to go along, to get along, to get to agree with the career politicians in both parties, to get in bed with the lobbyists and special interests, then I ain't your guy. There is a reason that we have $18 trillion in debt. Because as conservatives, as Republicans, we keep winning elections. We got a Republican House, we got a Republican Senate, and we don't have leaders who honor their commitments. I will always tell the truth and do what I said I would.
Governor Christie, you're not exactly the darling of conservatives. You tout your record as a Republican governor in a blue state. On Facebook, the most people talking about you, not surprisingly, come from your state of New Jersey. And one of the top issues they are talking about is the economy. This may be why. Under your watch, New Jersey has undergone 9 credit rating downgrades. The state's 44th in private sector growth. You face an employee pension crisis. And the Garden State has the 3rd highest foreclosure rate in the country. So why should voters believe that your management of the country's finances would be any different?
If you think it's bad now, you should have seen it when I got there. The fact is, in the 8 years before I became governor, taxes and fees were raised at the state level 115 times. In the 8 years before I became governor, spending was increased 56%. And in the 8 years before I became governor, there was zero net private sector job growth in New Jersey. Zero for 8 years. So what did we do? We came in, we balanced an $11 billion deficit on a $29 billion budget by cutting over 800 programs in the state budget. We brought the budget into balance with no tax increases. In fact, we vetoed 5 income tax increases during my time as governor. We cut business taxes $2.3 billion, and we cut regulation by 1/3 of what my predecessor put in place. And what's happened since? 192,000 new private sector jobs in the 5.5 years I've been governor. We have a lot of work to do in New Jersey, but I am darn proud of how we brought our state back.
Governor Walker, you've consistently said that you want to make abortion illegal, even in cases of rape, incest, or to save the life of the mother. You recently signed an abortion law in Wisconsin that does have an exception for the mother's life, but you are on record as having objected to it. Would you really let a mother die rather than have an abortion? And with 83% of the American public in favor of a life exception, are you two out of the mainstream on this issue to win the general election?
Well, I'm pro-life. I've always been pro-life. And I've got a position I think is consistent with many Americans out there in that I believe that that is an unborn child that's in need of protection out there. And I've said many a time that that unborn child can be protected, and there are many other alternatives that will also protect the life of that mother. That's been consistently proven. Unlike Hillary Clinton, who has a radical position in terms of support for Planned Parenthood, I defunded Planned Parenthood more than 4 years ago, long before any of these videos came out. I've got a position that's in line with everyday America.
Governor Huckabee, like Governor Walker, you have staked out strong positions on social issues. You favor a constitutional amendment banning same-sex marriages. You favor a constitutional amendment banning abortions, except for the life of the mother. Millions of people in this country agree with you, but according to the polls, and again, this is an electability question, according to the polls, more people don't. So how do you persuade enough independents and Democrats to get elected in 2016?
Chris, I disagree with the idea that the real issue is a constitutional amendment. That's a long and difficult process. I've actually taken a position that's older than that. A lot of people are talking about defunding Planned Parenthood as if that's a huge game changer. I think it's time to do something even more bold. I think the next president ought to invoke the 5th and 14th Amendments to the Constitution. Now that we clearly know that baby inside the mother's womb is a person at the moment of conception. The reason we know that it is because of the DNA schedule that we now have clear scientific evidence on. And this notion that we just continue to ignore the personhood of the individual is a violation of that unborn child's 5th and 14th Amendment rights for due process and equal protection under the law. It's time that we recognize the Supreme Court is not the supreme being, and we change the policy to be pro-life and protect children instead of rip up their body parts and sell them like their parts to a Buick.
Senator Paul, you recently blamed the rise of ISIS on Republican hawks. You later said that statement, you could have said it better. But the statement went on, and you said, quote, everything they've talked about in foreign policy, they've been wrong for the last 20 years. Why are you so quick to blame your own party?
First of all, only ISIS is responsible for the terrorism. Only ISIS is responsible for the depravity. But we do have to examine, how are we going to defeat ISIS? I've got a proposal. I'm the leading voice in America for not arming the allies of ISIS. I've been fighting amidst a lot of opposition from both Hillary Clinton as well as some Republicans who wanted to send arms to the allies of ISIS. ISIS rides around in $1 billion worth of U.S. Humvees. It's a disgrace. We have to stop it. We shouldn't fund our enemies, for goodness sakes. So, we didn't create ISIS. ISIS created themselves, but we will stop them. And one of the ways we stop them is by not funding them and by not arming them.
Governor Kasich, You chose to expand Medicaid in your state, unlike several other governors on the stage tonight, and it is already over budget by some estimates, costing taxpayers an additional $1.4 billion in just the first 18 months. You defended your Medicaid expansion by invoking God, saying to skeptics that when they arrive in heaven, St. Peter isn't going to ask them how small they've kept government, but what they have done for the poor. Why should Republican voters, who generally want to shrink government, believe that you won't use your St. Peter rationale to expand every government program?
Well, first of all, Megan, you should know that President Reagan expanded Medicaid 3 or 4 times. Secondly, I had an opportunity to bring resources back to Ohio to do what? To treat the mentally ill, 10,000 of them sit in our prisons. It costs $22,500 a year to keep them in prison. I'd rather get them their medication so they could lead a decent life. Secondly, we are rehabbing the drug addicted. 80% of the people in our prisons have addiction problems. We now treat them in the prisons, release them in the community, and the recidivism rate is 10%. And everybody across this country knows that the tsunami of drugs is threatening their very families. So we're treating them and getting them on their feet. And finally, the working poor, instead of them having come into the emergency rooms where it costs more, where they're sicker and we end up paying, we brought a program in here to make sure that people could get on their feet. And you know what? Everybody has a right to their God-given purpose. And finally, our Medicaid is growing at one of the lowest rates in the country. And finally, we went from $8 billion in the hole to $2 billion in the black. We've cut $5 billion in taxes, and we've grown 350,000 jobs.
Gentlemen, we're turning to a new subject that all of you have been talking about and some of you have been disagreeing about, and that is the issue of immigration. Governor Bush, you released a new plan this week on illegal immigration, focusing on enforcement, which some suggest is your effort to show that you're not soft on that issue. I want to ask you about a statement that you made last year about illegal immigrants. And here's what you said. They broke the law. But it's not a felony. It's an act of love. It's an act of commitment to your family. Do you stand by that statement, and do you stand by your support for earned legal status?
I do. I believe that the great majority of people coming here illegally have no other option. They want to provide for their family. But we need to control our border. It's our responsibility to pick and choose who comes in. So I've written a book about this, and yet this week I did come up with a comprehensive strategy that really mirrored what we said in the book, which is that we need to deal with E-Verify. We need to deal with people that come with a legal visa and overstay. We need to be much more strategic on how we deal with border enforcement, border security. We need to eliminate the sanctuary cities in this country. It is ridiculous and tragic that people are dying because of the fact that local governments are not following the federal law. There's much to do. And I think rather than talking about this as a wedge issue, which Barack Obama's done now for 6 long years, the next president, and I hope to be that president, will fix this once and for all so that we can turn this into a driver for high sustained economic growth. And there should be a path to earn legal status for those that are here. Not amnesty, earn legal status, which means you pay a fine and do many things over an extended period of time.
Thank you, sir. Mr. Trump, it has not escaped anybody's notice that you say that the Mexican government is sending criminals, rapists, drug dealers across the border. Governor Bush has called those remarks, quote, extraordinarily ugly. I'd like you, if you're right next to him, tell us, talk to him directly and say,